what was written in The Root by Edward Wyckoff Williams, and an incredibly interesting piece called Don't White People Kill Each Other Too. Do we have him on the line now?
Yes, you do.
Oh, I'm good. Here. How are you, man? Welcome. Good to have you with us.
So, it's a pleasure to be here, buddy.
So I really, we were all taken by this piece when we read it this morning, and one of our producers, Justin, found it and sent it over and said, this looks like something we should talk about, and we should. When I saw what you saw on television was when there was no response on This Week, when George Will said that you quote in your article, 150 black men are killed every week in this country, about 94% of them by other black men, and nobody stood up and said anything. Nobody confronted him back.
No one confronted it, exactly. No one confronted it, because a part of the point that I'm making the piece, Mark, is that this idea about black-on-black crime and black-on-black violence in particular has become so inundated in our social consciousness that no one ever thinks to challenge it. No one considers the fact that we aren't talking about other racial or ethnic groups and their intra-racial criminality. Because what has been so problematic about this sort of the rise of this dialogue is sort of now status quo in our socio-political discourse, is that it has actually helped to add to the criminalization or the idea of criminalization of black people. And so a lot of black people themselves have begun to believe this. And so, yes, you had Van Jones, the former advisor at the White House, sitting right next to George Will, and he just allowed the conversation to continue because that has just become sort of accepted parlance in judicial and political circles. And so that's a part of why I really wanted to address it, to sort of begin to unpack and dismantle this language, which then gives rise to public policy that informs, that further informs these ideas about blacks and crime, which at the end of the day are just fallacies. Every race has high instances of interracial crime. And so looking at the FBI and the DOJ statistics and even the CISNIS data, you see that upwards of 90% of whites kill other whites. It's just the way that our society works. Part of that is our families, our relationships, our friendships are still very much segregated in a particular kind of way.
And as our communities are as well.
So that happens all over the world, right? So there's nothing odd about the fact that black people will not only be in a family with other black people and in relationships with other black people, and then therefore get into arguments and fights with other black people, and therefore when those fights reach the point where passions rise to the point of death and murder, they would then be killing each other, because that's the exact same thing that happens in the greater white populace. So this idea that somehow black-on-black crime is more violent is just simply untrue. But then beyond that, Mark, and I really want the listeners to understand this, is that not just by virtue of the fact that whites make up the majority of the population, and I think right now, based off the 2010 census, that's 63.7% of the population. So not just because they make up a majority of the population do they, just by virtue of numbers, commit more crimes, but statistically, they commit more violent crimes than any other group, and at times, those percentages exceed their population. So there are instances like with aggregated assault, larceny, and theft, where white Americans commit upwards of 70% of those acts. So they are exceeding their own percentage in terms of the violent crimes that they're committing. One of the really key cases, which is actually really problematic and should be addressed from a public policy perspective, is violent, forcible rape. Most of the actions of violent, forcible rape are perpetrated by white males in America. But no one is talking about white-on-white crime with respect to forcible rape crimes. We always hear in our media narrative, black-on-black crime is the problem. And when you have that perpetrated at the highest levels of government, so even sort of black people in Congress who think that maybe by focusing on the disproportionate numbers of crime in our communities and talking about it in that couched way, that they will help further a progressive plan, what they end up doing is that they promote over-policing of communities. And so you end up with African-American communities like Baltimore, where you are, being over-policed, and of course you're going to find more crime in a community if you focus specifically on that community. But you are missing violent crime all over the country while still finding violent crime all over the country, but you're not over-policing it to the point that the real numbers would come to bear. And I think that that is the problem, that we have not just criminalized black-on-black crime in such a way that it's become a media narrative, but we've begun to criminalize blackness. So you end up with a Trayvon Martin case where just by virtue of his brown skin, despite the fact that he's only armed with Skittles and an iced tea, he becomes menacing. He becomes the perpetrator. He becomes the problem. And that is why we have to talk about it, because now it is affecting our children, and it is shaping the world that comes to be. And even in the age of Obama, we are still dealing with Jim Crow mentality. That must end.
So, folks, the lines are open at 410-319-8888. We'd love you to join us here with Edward Wyckoff Williams. We're talking about his Root article posted today, Don't White People Kill Each Other, Too? 410-319-8888. We'll come to the calls coming in just a minute. One of the things you mentioned in terms of statistics, and there's always a battle over statistics in this country when it comes to these kinds of things, the difference between real numbers and per capita numbers. So people look at what we call, and I also abhor the constant push, black-on-black crime. And I think it was important that you pointed out in your piece that The Guardian refuses to use that language anymore.
Yes. One of the most respected journalistic organizations.
As they said in the piece, that they wouldn't say white-on-white crime, so we would say black-on-black crime, but they just don't say it at all.
Yes, exactly.
But there is a feeling in many communities, among many people, that the jails are filled up with nothing but African-American folks, people of color, so that's where crime lives.
So essentially what happens is you create a problem, and then you blame the problem for the problem, right? So it's sort of like we could go back to I thought was really interesting, because I was going to use the Toni Morrison narrative about from The Bluest Lie, where she says, and we say the victim had no right to live. We're wrong, of course, but it doesn't matter because it's too late. But actually, I would go back to Harper Lee and To Kill a Mockingbird, because it's a classic case where a black man is accused of a crime he did not commit, but ends up going to jail and charged for it anyway. And so you end up in basically this new America, right, a post-civil rights America, where in the 1980s we saw drug laws designed specifically, particularly around crack cocaine, to ensure the very outcome we now live with, i.e., high numbers of African Americans in prison and representing a disproportionate number of people in prison. And we then look to that actual outcome and say the outcome justifies the means, and the outcome justifies the narrative with which we use to talk about it. So you place police armed with policy and laws in order to justify arrest, over-arresting, over-policing. And when you then fill up, you know, what I love about The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander, which everyone needs to buy and read, is you end up with this outcome. And she talks about how the outcome is the direct result of policymakers, particularly on the conservative end, seeking to find a way to institutionalize a neo-slavery. So if you can't beat them in Congress, if you can't beat black people down and take away their rights in Congress, what you do is you create laws and policies that keep them in jail. And so we have a generation, now two generations, of young black men imprisoned, disenfranchised with respect to their voting rights, high recidivism rates, so they're going back to jail. And we talk about black-on-black crime. Hollywood pushes the same narrative and the same media image. And it becomes this accepted reality, when in fact it's a fallacy. But the problem is now they have statistics to back up their argument. It's a spiraling circle of nonsense and injustice, but it's very hard to get at what started it. What started it was that 400 to 500 years ago, Africans were put in chains. And at the end of the day, policymakers have been extremely irresponsible and or extremely manipulative in creating a world in which they still are. And so a part of what I'm trying to do at the very least is to get people thinking. And you will notice, with respect to the article at the Root, this piece has done very, very well. It's gone viral in a lot of ways. But a lot of the pushback has been from other African Americans who say, yes, but the truth is, you know, if you focus on the per capita numbers, we do commit more crime. The truth is, if you focused on per capita numbers, we also were disproportionately enslaved. We also were disproportionately discriminated against. We also have been disproportionately the victims of a Jim Crow society for, I would say, the entirety of the last 150 years. And so, of course, you then find greater poverty levels. You find people of higher unemployment rates. And you would find higher crime levels, except for the fact that I'm actually not positive we do, because when you look at the crime rates, you find that white people are still committing massive amounts of crime and disproportionately a massive amount of violent crime. What you do find, though, is over-policing in our communities that ends up with the result, like you said, of higher rates of young black males in jail.
Let me open the phone to let folks join in this conversation. 410-319-8888 is the number here as we talk to Edward Wyckoff Williams about his piece that was in The Root. That is entitled "Don't White People Kill Each Other Too." He's author, columnist, political analyst for MSNBC. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And let's go to Donald in Hamilton. You're on the air.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well. Welcome.
A very powerful discussion. Your guest is on point, and it's going to be very difficult to convince a lot of people that what he's basically saying is true, and it's going to be difficult to convince black people that it's true. For instance, Mark, we don't have to go around the world in every city. We just go right here to Baltimore City. It was the federal government, the state government, and the city government that has created conditions in Baltimore, the city. You know about the historic segregation that has taken place here,
right,
in Baltimore City, and the environment and the climate and the conditions that people have lived under. You know, there's boarded up buildings and that's in Baltimore City that has been boarded up since the 68 riots.
Right.
And the communities, we see that all the development is going downtown to the harbor area, but there's no development within the communities, which create that environment. And the local news stations, whenever something happens in the within our communities, that's broadcast. It's just the prime example was that what took place down at Harbor Valentine's Day.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to finish up because we have like seven callers calling in, and we only have Edward here for like another 8 or 9 minutes. So I didn't mean to hang up on you. Okay, 410-319-8888 is the number here. Reverend Meredith, you're on the air.
Oh, Mark. Good evening. I would really like to thank the brother who is your guest, because he really, really hits the nail on the head. And I will attempt and really work on not using that term black on black crime. But I do think, though, particularly in a city like Baltimore and cities around the nation, that we do need a urban peace movement. And I do commend the people in Baltimore working in urban peace movement. And I think that violence really is an epidemic across America, and it is part and parcel the reason why America is the way it is, because this country was founded on violence. And that is the karma that we face, and we really need to uproot that. So I'd like to get to talk about his suggestion for working on urban peace movements and creating viable peace movements across the state.
Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate that, and I think that's a really powerful statement. Mark, are you going to take another call, or we can address our?
You can address
right
that.
Now?
Go ahead. You can address it now. Go ahead.
I would like to say that was so key, because it sort of sliced through this entire conversation, and it gives perspective that ultimately, and I think I made this point. I tried my best to make this point toward the end of the article, where I said that what we are dealing with in terms of statistics across the board, regardless of race, is an increasingly violent society. And that violent culture is what the real problem is. Now, that might be mostly perpetrated by whites and then blamed on blacks, but the truth is it's a problem for all of Americans. And this is a part of our culture from video games to television to movies to reality, where you have people like a George Zimmerman who dreams of being a police officer. And in his mind, and I think that there might be mental illness issues here, but in his mind, the way to prove himself as a police officer or a law enforcement official is to shoot a black male in the chest. Because that narrative has been enforced, reinforced, propagated, perpetuated throughout, I would say, at least the last sort of in the television age. But like the sister said, throughout our entire history. So it's an increasingly violent society armed with guns and an irresponsible gun lobby and irresponsible policymakers that is creating something that requires, like she said, an urban peace movement. And I love that.
There are a couple of callers in I want to get to here. I can see from my screen that want to have questions about what you're saying. So let's get to them for a minute here. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Strider, then Casey, very quickly. Strider, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. Go ahead.
Hey, I agree with – I didn't read the article, but I listened to the show, and I agree with what he's saying. And, you know, my thing, of course, I'm part of the Guardian Angels here in Baltimore, and we go through the neighborhoods with all the violence and the crime. And the most upsetting thing to me about the Trayvon Martin killing, and, you know, clearly, you know, it was a racially motivated shooting. But that one shooting sparked something all the way across the country where cities all over the world were just standing up and preaching against this violence between, you know, this white man who shot this black
right.
man. And, of course, we have 48 murders here in Baltimore City. 88% of them are black-on-black crimes. And one of the things that there are community people in Baltimore City have been trying to do is stop the violence here. And we're like, wait a minute, where's the outrage for the murders that we have right here? But this one killing, it has enough attention that realistically, other than looking at the fact that, okay, this is what happened to him and it was clearly wrong, what can we do? We should look at ourselves as well.
So that's an interesting point you raised, Strider. Before we get to another caller here, before we have to end this segment, Edward, let's speak to that, especially in terms of, I mean, there are movements across the country in almost every poor inner-city neighborhood to end the violence.
This is interesting because Ta-Nehisi Coates of The Atlantic, who's also African-American.
Who's been on the show
really
many times.
Writer.
Right.
Yeah, you know him very well.
Yes.
A very prolific writer. He spoke to this very question because he was getting pushback with respect to a lot of his writing, because obviously most of us have been focused on this case for the last month and have been writing a lot about it. And he was getting a lot of pushback in the same way that I have in the sort of in the blogosphere in light of the things that I've written, basically saying, but the truth is, we do have a problem. Yes, we do have a problem. And criminality and violence is a problem in all communities, and it is a problem in the African-American community. The point that I was making about how we frame it and ignore criminality in other communities and then create a narrative that blacks are always and everywhere the perpetrators is what is problematic from my perspective. So in terms of addressing the actual general problem in terms of African-American violence and crime, I think it's an important point, and I really respect the caller who just made that point. But the truth of the matter is, and this is why I brought up Ta-Nehisi's piece, is that he said a lot of the pushback was that leaders like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson had not been addressing black-on-black violence, as if the only time they want to talk about quote-unquote civil rights was when it was a white person killing a black person. And he completely dismantled that argument. And I want to completely dismantle it here. And what he did was he provided, over the last year alone, instances in which there were marches organized, in which there were speeches given on the very topic by these two leaders in particular and a plethora of other African Americans, including the President of the United States, Barack Obama, where they specifically called for a solution and an end to that kind of violence in our communities. The truth of the matter is the narrative itself, though it is problematic, has pushed for a greater voice around the issue of criminality in our communities. But what it has also done is over-police our community such that our young men are overrepresented in prisons, and it is also given a blanket sort of I don't even know what the word is, but this sort of blanket disconnect for everyone else in America to believe that they, i.e. white people, don't commit the majority of the crime when they actually do. And so there's this distance that occurs. There's this otherness that occurs. That same otherness, which is fueling, I think, our political debates with respect to this president, the sort of disenfranchising him by a prima facie case of his blackness, that he can be disrespected because, oh, well, he's black. The fact is, black people do not commit the majority of crime in this country, and we are not more violent than anyone else, but we are more policed, we are more imprisoned, we do have higher conviction rates. That is a problem. And let me say this one thing, and I know we want to take one more listener, but notice how the statistics add up even in this Trayvon Martin case. Because up until today, now that we hear the news that George Zimmerman is going to be charges will be brought against him, right? But up until today, he was a white man who had committed murder, but who would have not showed up on the DOJ stats. He would have not showed up anywhere in the FBI statistics. That is an example of how white people get away with crimes and aren't arrested and aren't convicted in a way that a black person never would. Trayvon Martin immediately became a statistic of another young black male shot. But Zimmerman walked. And that is a real problem. And so when you talk about, quote unquote, per capita, consider the fact that every day in this country, white people walk for crimes that black people are in prison for. That is something that we need to talk about, which is why we named this "Don't White People Kill Too."
Well, I think, and especially if crimes are not even nonviolent, but crimes built around drugs
I mean, that, I'm so glad you made that point.
I mean, that's where people walk away.
That's really where they walk away in big time ways. In big time ways.
I mean, because there's no, you know, people there are. We don't patrol the suburbs where people are shooting dope and smoking dope and doing whatever else other people do everywhere else in the country. I think
exactly.
I don't know if we have time because we're about to talk to Dave Zirin. Let me just, before we play my music, let me just say goodbye to my guest, Edward Wyckoff-Williams. It's been a pleasure to have you here, and I'm looking forward to have you on. Maybe in a couple of weeks you can come on and maybe have a good discussion, debate with others on the other side of this issue.
I would love that, Mark. Thank you so much for having me. An absolute pleasure.
Take care. Thank you
so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Edward Wyckoff-Williams. Don't White People Kill Each Other Too. Casey, I'm sorry we didn't get your call because I know you had something to say because I think I know which Casey that is. But we'll do it next time and make sure you have something to say on the air. We have to take a brief break. We're going to come right back with Dave Zirin from Edge of Sports to talk about why a manager can't speak his mind in Miami. Stay with us.